children, and let them come quickly. For a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused. For death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. 32. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and listen to the live stream from home base, from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and listen to the live stream from that location also. You can go to OurRadioNetwork.com. That's OurRadioNetwork.com in the Black Belt. And listen to the live stream at ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. You'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or an auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there, full of fresh new content, a podcast of the new programming on Time for an Awakening, and always provocative articles being posted. So check it out. It's new content being downloaded daily, especially the new content from the new programs, some of the podcasts. Check it out. It should be one of your favorites. If not, make it one of your favorites, please. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. And another rarity, a Sunday program where it's open for, because usually we have guests scheduled, but we have a vacancy in the calendar for this week. So it's no problem because the vacancy can be filled by the listening audience. So it's open forum this evening. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832 to join the conversation in open forum. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors. And we got a little mix up here, but let's double back and get that straight. It's always something live radio. You know, what I plan to do also for some of the listeners that missed the launch of the new program, Black Reality Think Tank, I plan to try to play that rebroadcast after tonight's live broadcast of Time for an Awakening. I got to see if I have that prepared. I was working on that earlier to put it up for podcasts on the website. Because some of the listeners had requested it on Friday's program. Hopefully it'll be prepared and I can rebroadcast that after the live broadcast of our program this evening. But we'll see. Either way, it will be up where you can hear it on the website no later than tomorrow. Hopefully I'll have it where we can listen to it this evening. But we'll be right back.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back. Time for an awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine today. It's a nice day going on. Just getting over some things that I'm, processing from yesterday's March they had, and noticing something about myself. But beside that, personally, I'm doing fine.
Are you talking about the march for, what's it called? The
Young March for Our Lives.
Yeah. I guess we can get in that because, listen, we're in open forum this evening. I was explaining to the listening audience, and you well know that we got a vacancy in the calendar open date. But it's no problem because we always can entertain special guests, which is a listening audience, and they can always get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Before we get started tonight, though, I want to welcome in our live UK audience from fundsahara.co.uk. That's over there, and our brothers and sisters in the diaspora over there in the UK are listening. In fact, Fundsahara broadcast in Africa and in the UK. So I just want to welcome in some of our listeners over there in the UK. I guess it's night talk for them over there because they're 6 hours ahead of us. So if they're listening live, they're listening at like 1 a.m. or something like that. But still, I want to welcome them in. If any of them want to be a part of the conversation, they can do that. And, you know, I'm in the process now trying to bring Skype into what we do. Skype, we used to have it in the past, but Skype would always have some monkey wrenches that they would throw in. So I kind of got away from Skype, but I might get back to them if it's more convenient for our audience from the UK to participate. But they can participate with us on our form we have now by dialing 020 020-3514-1993. Again, that's 020-3514-1993. And hit the pound sign and then dial in our call-in numbers of 215-490-9832. And some of our listening audience from across the Atlantic can participate. But other than that, our regular callers from the states and beyond can always get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. Yeah, Brother Richard, go ahead, because you wanted to mention some things. We got a couple of callers that I want to try to get on here. But go ahead if you want to.
I was just, it's kind of personal in a way, Brother Elliot, because I'm, you know, and me listening, I found it difficult for me to listen to the speeches that were given at the rally yesterday. And therefore, might be showing my own prejudgment. You know, when we talk about the deaths by guns, the Black community, you know, have been having in relationship to as young in our community, deaths by gun for a very long time. And my question, and I'm never really ever looking at the other, right? I'm always trying to ask the question about us in our mobilization and organizational process and why we haven't, and now the new generation. I didn't know, Elliot, that this generation that they're saying was speaking at this March for Our Lives was called Generation Z.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I guess I'm still stuck with the millennial, just learning how to say millennials.
Okay.
You know, I'm just getting that to come out. Now I understand the people are Z. But the question, my observation that I'm always making is that when I see these large rallies recently, I'm always asked, especially around these kind of particular issues, I'm asking within the Black community, are the young people actually having a voice? Have they decided to have a voice around these issues? Because it truly affects our community disproportionately. And what I'm hearing is that this young people that out of these suburban communities now, and maybe this might be my prejudgment, are being able to interject the Black community, recognizing that the Black community has been dealing with this. But it's what we see is the young white community. And my question is, why haven't our young people been proactive as a group, not just when they say, well, take 17 minutes to come out of the school in support of this, our March for Our Lives, but to recognizing the condition in our community. And I looked over, in Philadelphia, we're broke down in communities, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know the listening audience from around the country, around the world, to understand Philadelphia has communities. So we have a West Philadelphia community, a North Philadelphia, a South Philadelphia community. So when I see these things, I'm looking for how many young, people within our community is moving, even within our community, to use this platform to address the issues, these particular issues in our community. And I might be wrong, Elliot, but I don't see that response from our community, and it makes me raise the question of why. What is it about us adults that we haven't been able to instill within our young people who are being victimized by these conditions, the kind of proactive movement or voice? Because you see, what we're hearing is the political activism about to begin by particularly whites around this issue. And the issue before that was the opium issue, which drugs affected our community in a devastating manner. Before that, it was the prison community, the amount of Black people. Where is the proactive voice around our young people to use their voice and their, as you say, boots on the ground to bring the image that we recognize that this is a concern. And that bothers me, because I can't continue to hear see these young white future leaders. And yes, there were blacks in the podium. And yes, they were speaking about blacks being victimized, but it's by this, in this case, gun violence. But my concern is, when do we see the young within the black community taking that and not just utilizing our pain and suffering, but actually putting initiative, putting voice, putting feet on the ground, like we say the black youth of the civil rights era did, or like we say the young black soldiers coming home from World War II did, or the young black soldiers coming home from World War I. Those young people put the boots on the ground and created an energy within our community that we seen happen within our community. I don't see that, but I see that it's being used. Our suffering is being used. So that's what I, makes me difficult to listen to it. And well, which made me raise the question, Elliot, why aren't we? Why don't we see?
Well, I do agree. Our suffering is being used. And a lot of these groups use the suffering of these young people, of suffering of some of our women. When a lot of these white women have women marching out there, usually you don't see a lot of that dealing with black men. Black men has always been public enemy number one, and the black community, period. But, I do. And you know what? I did want to mention, too. We got a caller that was on here. It looked like he dropped off.
I see him.
Yeah, if that caller can give us a call back, I want to get him up here, because he was sitting up here. And caller, you know who you are. Give us a call back, and I want to get you on, because I definitely want your opinion on the topic that we're talking about, and plus other things, because I know that you've been out here in the community, and I know that you probably have some things that you want to share. So give us a call back at 215-490-9832. You know who you are. Look like you dropped off the board. I think you saw it too, Richard.
Yeah.
But listen, we kind of talked around about this before. This was before we knew that this was going to become like a national march. Our young people do want to speak out on this. They see our young people are not slow. They see what's going on. They know this violence have been going on in the black community for a long time. In fact, as long as they have been on the planet, this stuff has been going on. They know what's happening in their schools, where as soon as you go in, you've got a wand running up your legs, down your back. They're going through your pockets. You've got to pass a metal detector. And then you put on some schools now, you're putting stuff on a conveyor belt like you're at the airport. So they see that these schools are prison, almost like you're entering into a prison. It's a prison environment. They see it. They know what's going on at these other schools like Columbine and some of these schools that has these school shootings. They don't have guards there. They don't have listen, along with some of the things that I just mentioned, they still have armed police in the schools. You have on some of these public schools, and a lot of these public schools in Philadelphia, you have a school police and you have the regular cop that's either in school or sitting outside. So you have all types almost like preparing them for prison environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our children know that these schools that they're seeing on TV is not like that. These schools, they don't walk in with no little pistol in their pocket. These schools, these white kids is walking in there with AR-15s, mm-hmm. AK-47. I mean, you coming in there with military-style weapons. It's nobody at the door. And a lot of these black schools, they violate the fire code every day, Richard. And if something mm-hmm. broke out, thousands of our children would be killed. Because in a lot of these schools, it's one entrance. where you can come in. That's the entrance where they have everything set up. The one, the metal detector and everything. All the other doors is locked. You can't get out. You can't get out. And if you get out, alarm goes off because they know somebody is opening the door so somebody can come in. At these white schools, evidently they can get in several different ways. It's no guards there, and especially no armed guards. And they don't have metal detectors. So the children see what's going on. And another thing, too, Richard, this March for Our Lives, it was politically arranged, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Politicians arranged this. You see now where if children want to go, they don't have to pay anything. Food is provided, even though it's at Murder King and other places like that. But, you know, if you want to call that food, they're providing food for them. They're providing transportation, and they're providing lodging. That's politics. So these white politicians are facilitating things for their children to express their frustration. Sure, some blacks sprinkled in. But the thing is, these black so-called leadership or black misleadership class is not facilitating any of this for black students to speak. Number one, you know why, Richard? Because they can't really control the message of some of these young people.
There you go.
If they put some of these young people up there, they might say anything and put some of these sorry black politicians behind on the spot. So they don't want that. They don't want the children getting up there, putting them on the spot, saying something that they can't control. They want to control the message. So believe me, the black children that you see speaking at these rallies, March for Your Lives, March of Dimes, or whatever, March whatever.
Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, their message, they kind of got an idea of the message that they're going to put out. It's controlled. Now, the white kids, they can get up there and basically say what they want. But the black ones that they put in those marches and rallies, they got an idea of what they're going to present. Sure, you can always throw a monkey wrench in there, but some of the young people, they're really not that sophisticated in that. So they might get up there and just say a party line, spout a party line if they give them something that they want to say. But no, you're not going to see black politicians facilitate things like that for young black people, urban youth out of these schools. You ain't going to see nothing where they can get up there and speak their mind. They might get up there and say anything. And when I say anything, they're putting those politicians on the spot.
And, you know, and that's what I think we have to be mindful of. And, you know, another thing that I'd seen that made me raise this question, over the weekend, I was sent an article on recognizing majority black cities when their existence is being questioned. And I didn't know.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Richard.
How many cities have over from 50 to 80% black population? So when these issues come up, my mind goes to, well, the youth, and usually when checking a couple of them, a large population in these cities are young. They're, you know, even Tuskegee. The town of Tuskegee has a large black population and is primarily young. So when they have these things, I'm asking, and the social economic position of these cities is not high. Unemployment level is high. Usually the crime rate is high, and it's not necessarily crime in relationship to murders, but burglary and things like that. But the point is, these conditions exist. And as you say, with the political leadership, but it makes me raise the question of when I say I want to see and hear, and we're saying we want to see and hear from them, is it because at another level, our expectation is so low, you know, that they don't feel that, as you say, that their voice would be heard? Because what I heard, besides, you know, we heard about the Soros supporting Black Lives Matter, right? And we heard the money that was coming from them. But I also heard that Oprah, I don't know if it's true or not, put up $500,000 for this march. Where do you see that kind of money to speak that will be given to Black youth to organize, to mobilize within their community to bring up the natural leadership? And as you say, bring voice to the particular circumstances. Where do you see that?
Well, go ahead.
You know, I'll just, you know, that's the thing, I guess. I don't want to say it frustrates me, Elliot. I just want to say it's the thing that we have to look at, because we need to get them to be engaged, not just, as you say, prepared for prison. And that talent and that leadership is there to be able to do that. And I would like to see it more happen within our community to bring the energy of what we need to do. But is it because we adults are not doing something to raise the expectation level? Is that why?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, that we're not doing our job, so to speak, and a failure of the misleadership class, because just like I mentioned before, these things are this movement that we're talking about was set up politically. Mm-hmm. Anytime you get these people to donate dollars, somebody had to go to them. It's political. It's political. You can't go to Oprah and ask her for a damn thing. You know what I'm saying? You can't pick up the phone and call Oprah. But somebody picked up the phone and called Oprah and Sora, whoever. Somebody picked up the phone and was able to facilitate lodging. If young people come from anywhere all over the country, they got lodging, they got food, and they got transportation with Ubers and Lyfts and all this other stuff. Somebody was able to facilitate that. That's political. Mm-hmm. That's political. And believe me, when I'm talking, and I guess the listening audience know, when I'm talking about political, I'm not talking about this crap that our people are involved in, this merry-go-round Democrat and Republican. I'm talking about political leadership that we don't have, that we need to have. I ain't talking about this crap that these Black folks be playing games with. Black faces on white power. No, when I'm talking political, I'm not talking about that. Let me put a couple callers involved, and then I'll move on to some of the other issues. Let's go to Wilmington, Delaware. Wilmington, are you there?
Yes, Wilmington. You see a 302 number? That's why you're saying Wilmington?
Yes.
Oh, yes, sir.
Sister, what's your name? Where you? Well, I know who you're calling from, but what's your name?
Well, I'm calling out of the Philadelphia area, but yes, I have a Delaware number.
Okay.
My name is Melody, and I was listening in. I didn't would you like me to comment or something on what?
No, you don't have to comment on what we've been talking about. You can bring, this is open forum, so you can bring anything to the table that you want.
Well, I like to bring, you know, I just bear witness that, you know, it had to be political that yesterday's march, that, you know, being able to conveniently have the youth in hotels and feed them and organize the whoever took them down there to probably physically pay them as well. If that kind of funding was in our communities, the urban communities, yes, we would be able to do a lot more as well. So I'm in total agreement. I think that it's really unfair, but it's good. I think that at this time, things are happening because they're supposed to happen this way. And I'm glad because, you know, we've been doing it for a long time and nothing has been done. And if this is the way something has to be done, so be it, as long as it gets done. That's my take, because, you know, of course, we can go on and on about what's not right. But I believe that it's our time now, and however we get there, you know, we're going to get there, because we've been marching and protesting for a long time. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been speaking about these things for years and years and years. So now, unless they say it, is when we believe it, and it's true. You know, you got to hear it out of the mouth of some people that may not look like us for them to physically believe and agree with what somebody is saying. So that's okay. this is the way it has to be done. I'm glad the youth are sticking up and saying something. I think this is the beginning, and I'm enjoying it, listening to the conversation, the dialogue.
Sister Melody, this is your first time calling, but don't make it your last.
Oh, no, sir, I won't. I will not make it. I heard tomorrow that they're going to have a conversation with the grandmaster, and I'm going to tune in as well tomorrow.
Oh, okay. You must be talking about on Acres of Diamonds.
Yes, sir.
Great, great. Okay. All right. Don't be a stranger.
Yes, sir. No, I can learn a lot, and I'm listening, so thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News? Newport News?
Well, yeah. Can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
Okay. I was going to try to give a 30-second blip, but I'm going to try to parse my way through this based on what you were just talking about. Richard started out asking about why we can't get it from our people.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the luxury of being aware since I marched at 15 or 16. I'm 64 now, and I keep saying every time I come on to your program, I try to give advice to step back and take a big look. On this march, when people pay attention to the pageantry, rather than start asking the question, what don't I not know? Here's what I'm going to say to you. Everything you said is 100% true about the politics behind this, and I use the word usurping. Capital and money takes control of everything. Ask yourself, if these people are so passionate over what happened 6 or 8 weeks ago, why did they wait to occupy D.C. when Congress is out and the president is away in Florida? That's what money does. Money is not meant to have a protest that would disrupt commerce or what they feel is important. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?
Oh, certainly.
That, and I'm saying it especially for the young lady that just called in, because I can tell you, if I would waste too much time to tell you how many times I've seen in the 45 years that I've been awake in this country and seen this type of event go on, and I see it as a sign of progress, and then realize capital took control to direct away from any kind of change. Any kind of change. And now I'm going to tell you this. Richard knows this because I've been bombarding him for the last week and a half. I'm on a mini crusade right now against Twitter. And it happened because of what happened with Oprah. As soon as George Clooney and Bill, I said it to a couple weeks ago talking to you. As soon as Bill and Melinda Gates gave $500,000 to this cause, Oprah jumped on board and said she was so moved, she gave $500,000. Then out of nowhere, I look and see her, because I monitor Twitter, Dwayne Wade and his wife, we're so moved by the youth, we're giving $200,000. I'm at the age now, I don't mind confronting you directly. I sent tweets to both of them and tagged them in multiple, and I've been putting them on my Facebook page because Twitter has now blocked me. I didn't call them outside of their names. I asked them a simple question, and Richard has seen this tweet over and over. Where were these concerned Negroes when Ferguson, St. Louis, Baltimore, and New York City youth were crying out, wanting to be recognized, wanting to be heard? Why weren't you moved in? And I'm going to tie it back into what Richard's first thing was. Well, why can't we see protests? I can tell you because I've studied it and asked that question, and I tell you, you step back and look and you'll see why. Has any of these white people's behavior been criminalized? If you live in any one of those majority black cities, you will find out if you walk out of school, your parents can't take off from work or donate $500,000 to the judge or the sheriff to be sure that they give you a permit. All of this stuff has been criminalized, and I blame the misleadership class to talk about it because I've been on their case. I don't use Twitter to do kitty pictures or none of that. I go directly to people that I see that are bullshitting us on what their purpose and their mission is. I've done it to Andrew Young. I've sent it to Meet the Press. I don't mind telling them I see through this. As a matter of fact, let me tie it into another one I see, that our people don't want to inconvenience anybody. That town hall from Bernie Sanders and Warren, did any of you watch the town hall?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I didn't get it. Yeah, I didn't get it. I didn't get to see it.
Well, I directly tagged you in some stuff because I like the work you do, and I know you don't have time to do the research. And research and reading is what I do. I'm going to give you a quick synopsis, and you can pull up my Facebook page and see it, because I put it in four or five different formats, and I even sent it to the one black guy who was on the stage with Bernie Sanders, because 2 years ago, reading a report from him called Umbrellas Don't Make It Rain, Derek Hamilton, a black economist who does work with William Sandy Darity, that I found out you had on your program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I struck up a social media, internet relationship with them over 2.5 years ago, asking for studies, and they've been sending it to me. They even wanted to know where did I go to school, and I told them School of Life. I just like to know these things. They've shared with me a lot of stuff. I started pumping their names 18, 19 months ago, too. Joey Reed, even when Melissa Harris-Perry was there, Al Sharpton, and all of this. And I'm going to tell you, I do that because I want to know what these people are all about. When you send them that kind of information and show them a black professional, do you think any of them had them on the show? No. I know you know the answer. But let me tell you what I just did, and you can check my Facebook page. Derek Hamilton, when he first opened his mouth on that stage, he spoke directly about wealth inequality, income inequality, and how it affects minorities and poor people. That's what he did. Bernie Sanders went around the room, and each time that man spoke, he spoke on just that subject. He told people what he's going to talk about, and he talked on it. And I'm going to tell you why you'll be proud if you watch the video. If you go to my page, you'll see it, because I try to put timestamps on it. When that black man finished, the last words out of his mouth was the word reparations. And what he said is, even if we get to do these other things that I recommend, this nation will not be successful, I'm paraphrasing him, until it comes to grips with reparations. Now, I haven't heard a black man on national forum say anything about reparations as firmly as he did. And I invite you to go and listen to what I said, find out if I'm telling the truth, and you probably can get Derek Hamilton back on. But I want to add one more thing and then let you go, because I've already put it on my Facebook page and it's public. You can go and verify what I'm telling you. And I try to make it easy for people to go back and find stuff when I tell them about it. I got upset because The Intercept, you know, The Intercept was started by Jeremy Scahill and Glenn Greenwald, two noted reporters, and, you know, they had their issues with the establishment and the whole bit. But they had the nerve to start a podcast called Deconstruct. The very first podcast they interviewed, they talked to Bernie Sanders about his town hall. In the body of the text, they talked about Michael Moore, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. Now, mind you, it was four people at that table with seats: Derek Hamilton, Michael Moore, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. I went directly to their page, pulled up the comments, and told them, I, as a 64-year-old black man, don't find any of this surprising. You had four permanent seats at the table, but in your entire interview, you talked to Bernie Sanders, and you never mentioned the one person that didn't speak in slogans and bullet points for the Democrat Party. That one person was Derek Hamilton. He spoke on the need for reparations, a new system, how to get money out of government, and what programs this government could do for the people instead of corporations. And I told him, I don't find it surprising, because you know why? Erasure and exclusion of black experts is the norm in this country. And my job to tell you each time I see it is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I plastered it all over Facebook. Right now, Twitter has me on a ban. I'm going to yield the mic and listen in. But I'm going to tell you, what upsets me is in this era when we have black people have the technology to put your word out there, and the only thing they can do is block you from their platform, and all you want to do is have kittens and puppies and trips to Bermuda on your Facebook page. The platform that these people use to create this movement of what, March for Our Lives, they did it all on social media, but they had backing from what? Celebrities. Mm-hmm. Our people have neighborhoods, but we don't have the kind of community. I despise people like Dwayne Wade. How dare you tell me you got moved by 17 white kids getting killed in a school? You didn't have a damn thing to say from Ferguson to St. Louis to Sacramento to Fruitville and all the others that have been shot, killed, and killed in their own backyard.
And the last
that
time
didn't move you?
And the last time I noticed, Brother Otis, I'm getting no feedback. Dwayne Wade is from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
not only that, had a close cousin get killed in Chicago just, what, a year ago?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't move. Get the hell out of my face, my friend.
Brother Otis, I'm not surprised. I didn't get to see that footage, but I will check it out. I'm not surprised that any surrogate of Professor Darity is speaking about reparations, because you know, I don't know whether you heard the program when he was on with us.
I went back and watched it, sir.
Okay, Mr. Darity. Well, you know, he's no lightweight. He's what? I think he's over the School of Economics at Duke University.
Let me tell you something else. You already know this because I didn't know that you'd had him on, because like I said, I just happened to run across him on YouTube, and then I approached him on Twitter asking him questions, and he engaged with me right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it surprised me. And when I asked him specific questions, he gave me information. But here's the other thing I'm going to tell you. I'm a big proponent of using hashtags, because people have a habit of telling you what they did and can't track it. But what I like about this platform is you can go to a hashtag that I've been using for about 2 years called Miss Me With The BS. And you can pull up stuff I've been putting on for 2 or 3 years, calling these people out. Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters, all of them. When I hear them double speaking and double talking, I ask them, where were you on this event? And Twitter has me, I'm off of Twitter because they want to give me a 12-hour ban for sending that tweet to Dwayne Wade. If you get a chance, pull it up. They say I violated their guidelines. If you pull up a tweet, there is nothing threatening about it. All I did was call in on his duplicity. Where were you when these young black? And matter of fact, I went so far as to take the issue of Philadelphia's school system from a real, what is it, Real TV, Real Talk TV, or out of Philadelphia, Real News Television Network. They did an interview with all black Philadelphia high school students. I tagged that article and I told the people at Facebook, I'm not going to push a button for a 12-hour ban. I don't need your platform when I'm speaking truth and you're going to try to criminalize me. That's what's wrong with this country. If you don't want me to speak truth on your platform, you push the button. And I scribble all over it and keep sending. Every time they send me something telling me I can start the 12-hour ban, I don't need you.
Thank you for your contribution, Balloon. Richard, you know, I'm not surprised. I want to check that out with the.
Yeah, I seen it, but I didn't get a chance to watch it.
Okay. Yeah. And listen, if Derek Hamilton was speaking about reparations, and I didn't know that he was a protege of Professor Darity, I know that he went up there speaking strong in reference to it. And you know that Bernie Sanders, I don't know about the other ones on the panel because they never said publicly, but I can imagine what their answer would be. But you know that Bernie Sanders said publicly that he wasn't interested in having a conversation in reference to reparations, but he wanted black support. So, you know, these things we got to be aware of when we're talking about these politicians. We got to be aware of, just like Brother was talking about the double speak. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Since you brought that up, I was trying not to hoard the show. I sent and tagged Bernie Sanders in there telling him, I said, "Burn." And matter of fact, I have a couple of white friends out of California that commented, and I bulleted theirs and sent it to them, saying, "Bernie Sanders claimed that a rising tide will lift all boats." And I put in my scathing review of his butt in that interview. I told him, "You had Derek Hamilton there when Hamilton gave you the necessary protocol to fix the problem." As I said, if you look at the live telecast, when Hamilton stopped speaking, you pivoted away to something totally new because you're not about trying to fix the problem. All you want is a vote. I've been on him. I told him, I can see. As a matter of fact, I tagged it with, "See how that works. You're not here for us."
Thanks for your contribution.
And that's why this whole thing is so important for us to continue to raise when we talk about our young people and we talk about this Generation Z or the millennials, and you know, because now for those of us who are baby boomers, we as Brother Otis said, we've seen the transition, and we in our lifetime, and those who are older can say within their lifetime, they have seen that, using Brother Otis' term, how the country has pivoted. It's always pivoted when it gets to addressing our issue. And that's why, for me, the discussion, we know systemically this is not what this country or its representatives, whether they black, white, or brown, or whatever, they will not be able to, they do not want to, because they rightfully benefit from the system as it's constructed. And if it stays as it is, now you can tinker around the edges, you know, and call it reform, but if it stays as it is, it will never be able to address our issues in mass. For those who look at not just our individual benefits, but look at us as a people and raise the question that the structure of this system, and, you know, that's why I don't particularly like when people say white supremacy, you know, because white supremacy, I will agree with those who say white supremacy, they're not supreme, but the system of white supremacy has structurally placed a lot of African people out of the ability to be able to benefit from this system. And it's naturally from its first inception, we go back to the Constitution, we go back to the writers of the Constitution. It's not made for that. For us to even want to believe that something is going to come out of it, it's just false hope. But we can propagate and develop what our ancestors, as you say, Elliot, because it's always been said that we see ourselves, especially specifically, and this has been, I think it's all along from the 18th century, you know, on, as a nation within a nation. That's our historical, policy and political position, that we are a nation within a nation. And when we who really hold on to that don't necessarily keep making our analysis from that, but thinking that reform is supposed to give us something, it becomes disheartening. But as the system moves on, when I see that the expectation of this generation that we're looking at may not even realize, they even use the term white supremacy and they'll reject it, but may not even realize that this is a system as it moves further and further to its original intent. And that's what the neocons and whatever, as it moves further and further to the original intent, which says government is not supposed to support anybody but the military. And isn't, when we look at what's happening, that's what's going on. So therefore, we definitely, as a group, as a people, are not going to be able to benefit from it. And those few who do, who call themselves advocates for it, they're, you know, you can't even expect nothing. But when our young people don't even know that their low expectation, that they're not to have a future in this, and don't raise within ourselves, as you say, the political aspect of how to mobilize and organize for our future to protect ourselves, then it becomes dangerous. It becomes dangerous, and that's what I guess it becomes disheartening to hear these young white people who now I'm going to call multicultural, include our voice and dance to our music and rap to our poetry, that once they get in that system, they really ain't going to have no opportunity to bring up to assist Black America or assist those young people that's their peers, because there's too many of them that's in need that they're going to have to make choices about.
Yeah, and it's not in their heart to do that. I mean, listen, experience is the best teacher. Dealing with Europeans, it's not in their heart to do that, period. And you know, these things are issues that need to be talked about, because this system that we're living under is on a collision course. It's almost like tantamount to the Europeans that got on the Titanic in the early 1900s. They didn't know when they got on that they was headed towards an iceberg that would eventually find all of them basically in a frozen grave, a watery grave. But just like John Henry Clark says in the beginning of our program, history is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. We can see what time it is. We need to make other arrangements to have a future for our people, and especially for our babies. The future for our people is not wrapped up in this system that we live under. It's not. That's a reality. The more and more we have conversations based on a lot of these things that we talk about and talk about on other programs, we need to talk about it from a different slant, not a Eurocentric slant, but a culturally based African-centered slant to find solutions for our problems. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. I got a couple of articles that I want to share. And it strangely, Richard, it was in reference to what you was talking about earlier. You must have read my mind, man. But when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, God, God.
Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas I hang with. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right-wing ideology. Glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison. Just cause I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in, and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman's heart abused in a marriage. The brink of holy war, bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondents don't tell the source of the tension, and they refuse to even mention European intervention or the massacres in Jenin. The innocent screams, U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s, weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing. And the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom. Cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib. Trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid. Where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth and I know the price is my life. But when I'm gone, they'll sing a song about immortal technique. Who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch,
niggas scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality. Fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo. While you hanging your flag out your project window.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And again, we're in open forum this evening, a open space on our schedule. But it's open for the listening audience to get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. You know, you mentioned some things earlier, and I want to read a couple articles in reference to what you were talking about. The second article is from a Black Agenda Reports that I just want to read. Glenn Ford wrote an interesting article a week ago, and I want to share it with the listening audience. First, I want to read from this published report from, where is this here, NIUSSP.org. It's called Majority to Minority, the Declining U.S. White Population. This article have documented the demography of the decline of the white population of the United States, a country with a long history of white supremacy. Despite the fact the U.S. Constitution and civil rights legislation of the 1960s guaranteed equality to all people, irrespective of race or ethnicity, everyone is far from equal in the United States today. On average, whites are far better off economically and educationally in many other ways than any other minority peoples in this country. Levels of residential segregation by race and ethnicity are still nearly as high as they were decades ago. Yet the share of the U.S. population that is white has declined over the past six decades. From 90% in 1950 to 61% in 2016, and will likely drop below 50% in another 30 years. What was once a majority will become a minority relatively soon, and has already become so in a few states. But this fact is important to realize as we move forward in this article. Let us note that the U.S. federal government agencies use two questions to measure race and ethnicity. One asks if the person is of Hispanic origin. The other asks about a person's race. A person is identified as white if he or she identifies as being white and non-Hispanic. A minority or non-white individual is anyone who is not a single race non-Hispanic white. The portion of whites in the United States population has declined since 1950, falling to 76% in 1990, 69% in 2000, and 64% in 2010, and 61% in 2016, the lowest percentage ever recorded in U.S. Census by the U.S. Census Bureau. Oh, you still there with me, Richard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I was getting a little feedback here. Maybe that's me. Although the majority of the U.S. population today is still white, meaning we repeat both white and non-Hispanic, non-whites account for more than half of the population in six states. Over the next 10 to 15 years, these half dozen minority states where racial ethnic minorities make up a majority of the population will likely be joined by eight other states. where whites now make up less than 60% of the population. Census projections show that the United States will be a majority-minority by 2050, but we project it will occur around 2044. Indeed, as soon as 2020, in the U.S., there will be fewer white than non-white children born in this country. This demographic shift in the United States has resulted in many whites proclaiming that they are losing their country and that they already are or soon will become a minority group. Certainly Donald Trump has capitalized on this sentiment and has further given license to his supporters to express their racism and hatred towards people of color. In other words, non-white. White supremacy is a powerful system that has created and perpetually perpetuated racial inequities in the United States. While whites will become a numerical minority in the coming decades, they will maintain their dominant position socially, socioeconomically, and politically. The massive economic resources and political power that whites have amassed will not erode as their numbers wane. In fact, as people of color have increased their numbers, the white political machinery is already working to minimize the political power of blacks, such as political ploys as gerrymandering, drawing political districts in other ways to disadvantage people of color. The voting identification laws that thwart political representation of groups of color. So we see from this article, and we kind of knew this was going on, about the population of whites decreasing. But we do see that whites are devising strategies where this can be buffered. I'm getting a little feedback. I don't know whether it's your mic or what. I'm getting a little feedback in the background.
I haven't moved.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So we see that they have a strategy to kind of thwart this decreasing population, and it's multifaceted. I want to share with the listening audience before we move on, because we got a couple of callers on hold, an article from Glenn Ford at the Black Agenda Report in reference to one of the facets to thwart this decreasing in white population. This article from Black Agenda Report is called The Great Bloody Black Dispersal from the Cities by Glenn Ford, executive editor of the Black Agenda Report. The grand plan is to reverse the demography of the 70s by forcing blacks out of the central cities and into the suburbs and small towns, rendering black people incapable of ever again launching a national movement headquartered in urban centers. The urban saga of the 1950s, 60s, and early 70s was white flight from the cities, fueled by massive public and private investment in the intervention of suburbia. In the 21st century, the racial dynamic has been purposely reversed as the window closes on black majority cities and on dreams of concentrated black urban political power. The rapidly unfolding dispersal of blacks from the cities, like the white invasion of the surrounding hinterlands in the previous era, is the result of a deliberate state policies dedicated and dictated by financial capital. But this time, the demographic makeover has been effectually and politically finessed with the active collaboration of the black misleadership class that paradoxically owes its existence to the concentration of black populations during the 60s and 70s. The deblacking of urban America is a wrenchful, painful, and bloody amputation in progress. In a frenzy of demolition, the U.S. has lost 250,000 units of public housing since the mid-90s, only a small fraction of which have been replaced with new public housing, according to the Center of the Budget and Policy Priorities. Black mayors and heavily black city councils have typically bought into the notion that concentrations of poor black people are definition vectors of pathology, while concentrations of affluent whites are the indispensable ingredients of urban renaissance. It is the logic of apartheid cloaked in phony economics. The deblacking of urban America is a wrenchful, bloody amputation in progress. Gentrification and resistance making, hold on a second. Whole neighborhoods and concentrations for rehabilitation from blight. Since the target infestation is human, the real estate industry covets the land, but demands that it first be cleansed of undesirable inhabitants. This requires a ruthless application of police force, creating a hostile environment, especially for young black males. Those mothers begin to seek an exit to the south or to nearby suburbs and starts the blackening of suburbs. It is no coincidence that police forces in resistance-minded cities across the nation introduce draconian stop-and-frisk, designated drug zones, and anti-gang policies of the 90s as gentrification went into high gear. They methodically created an undesirable, hostile environment for unwanted families. Let me read a couple more paragraphs on this. Gentrifying mayors across the country have sought and won control of local schools and used that power to make city life untenable for the excess black population in these cities. The school closings added new layers of instability to the lives of black families, especially in Chicago's heavily laden of black South and West sides. No mayor have been more intent on driving blacks from cities than Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, Barack Obama's former chief of staff and close political friend. Building on the mayhem inflicted on Chicago's black population, Emanuel caused the closing of 50 schools. The result was catastrophic, as students were forced to transit to unfamiliar gang turfs to attend schools that were often no better than the shuttered ones in their own neighborhoods. Many kids died, but people don't understand that if you are 16 years old and get on a bus and that bus lets you off in a gang-affiliated territory, you are gang-affiliated whether you're in a gang or not, says activist Gentui Brown. Just as the closing of Chicago public housing disrupted gang turf and gang markets, it set off a huge increase in street killings. The school closings added a new layer to the instability of black lives in Chicago's heavily laden black South and West sides. The besieged neighborhoods where the closings were concentrated was the last straw for some parents. The message is intentional and effective. Chicago's public schools have lost more than 52,000 students in the past 10 years, according to the report titled The Bleeding of Chicago by City Labs. That's because school closure sometimes prompts parents to leave the city altogether. In the last two decades, Chicago has lost 250,000 black residents, one quarter of its total black population. That's more black population than New Orleans and Atlanta, and equal to the black population of Manhattan in New York City. And it's happening all over the country because black removal from these cities is a national policy of both corporate parties. The grand plan is to dilute the cities of a black presence and to reverse the demography of the 70s by forcing blacks out of the central cities into suburbs and small towns. However, the folks that formed, now listen to this, Richard. However, now this is what Glenn Ford is saying, which leads to my premise of a strategy. However, the folks that formed the Black is Back Coalition in 2009 had heard Obama loud and clear. There's little time left to preserve black majorities in cities like Baltimore, Birmingham, Detroit, Cleveland, Savannah, and Newark. And it's already been lost in Washington, D.C., and will slip away soon in Atlanta. Or to maintain strong pluralities in Philadelphia, Cincinnati, and Norfolk. Black people can only maintain powerful and secure presence in these cities through a vibrant, independent, self-determined politics. Otherwise, black dispersal will proceed along its bloody, maddening course to at a quickening pace. That's why the Black is Back Coalition is holding an electoral school April 7th to 9th in St. Louis, Missouri. The coalition is guided by a 19-point national black political agenda for self-determination, a document that addresses virtually every issue confronting black people. Below are 4 points that are in particular relevant to the push out of blacks from the cities. The 4 points that he highlights are black community of control of police, roll back and end of mass incarceration of blacks, halt gentrification, and the right to free education through postgraduate level. You know, he talks here about a strategy here at the end of mm-hmm. this article, which is a strategy that can be implemented. We've had Brother O'Malley Yeshiteli on from the Black is Back Coalition. We've had Zakibi Rudy on from the Universal African People's Party. We've had people on from the 1 Million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. And we intend to have other folks on, like Callie Okuna, that was the architect of what you see down there in Jackson, Mississippi. So there is work going on this front. And it can be dealt with if we choose independent black leadership in these cities where we still dwell. And the reason, Richard, is because we pay taxes and we need some type of representation in what we're having and what we're getting. These blacks that are in office now don't represent the communities that they come from. They represent corporate interests. They represent gentrification. I mean, look at what's going on in Philly now in reference to the stadium being built. So we see what's going on. That's one of the strategies that can be utilized. And that strategy and that what is learned from those strategies can be utilized whether this country exists or not, whether you leave these shores or not, whether you repatriate back to the continent or not. Those same strategies used can be utilized in other places. So I'm just throwing that out there because that is a strategy. You know, that first article I read talked about six states now where whites are less than 50% of the population. And from that article, it says by 2030, it'll be 8 other states that there are less than 50% of the population. Now, going back to that, and before I'm going to pass it over to you before I go to these callers, going back to that article, because I didn't read the states, but I marked out some of the states that the whites now are less than 60% of the population. And I marked out 5 of the states: Maryland, Georgia, New Jersey, Mississippi, and Louisiana. All areas that can be focused on as a jump-off point for some type of initiative to drive independent black politics. It's already happening in Mississippi, one of those states on that list. It can happen in other places. The Black Coffee Party is in Louisiana. It can happen in those places. We just got to get the word out, get people involved, and get boots on the ground. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Brother Richard.
No. I agree. And, you know, as because if you look at this Brookings report,
then you'll see the states come from Texas all the way up past Florida, up through, as you know, all the way up through the southern states, in, up through Maryland. But, you know, when you break it down even more, where the way they make it happen is amongst cities, there is 722 cities in those states that population is 60% or more. That's small state. That's small cities.
Okay.
There's 496 mid-sized cities that population is between 60% and more. And in some of them, when you look at this chart, which they did, you see their cities with 100%, which, you know, and when we talking about that kind of political strategy, and you're talking about the city, and not if we even didn't get the states, if we controlled with this particular advantage of the cities. Now,
exactly.
What are the natural resources? I see most of these cities are on the water coast.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about controlling them politically and then economically, for those who want to look at trade as a continent, you know, and being partial to the continent, being partial to the Caribbean, you know, we're right on the waterway. Now, politics does not come. Politics is military. It's a military fight without without guns. So you're going to have to fight. But in those cities, when you're talking about 722 small cities where the population is greater, what I would like to see is how many are still controlled by whites. Because I think when we were dealing with Cleveland, it did come up. In some of those counties where we were dealing with Ferguson and whatever, it is a large black population, but the political leadership is white.
Okay.
That's what these are the things that has to change. And then using the strategy of, what's that, 1 million black conscious and conscientious black voters and contributors, where you take a non-aligned position when you talk about state politics and national politics, because now you have to bargain with it for it. But if we're not really engaging, then they don't have to. Or if we're all tied to the Democratic Party, then they don't have to.
And when you see
here in the state of Pennsylvania, the other thing is redlining. I mean, they're taking them to court because the Republican Party, illegally redlined in order to maintain a control over redistricting in order to control the political numerical number for their vote. So yes, it's.
But listen, we see based on what you said, because I didn't go deeper into that when you talked about all the cities contained in these states, whether they're major cities or even small. That leads to the strategy that Brother Zaki Baruti from the Universal African People's Organization talked about, proportional representation.
Representation, right.
You got Jersey, for example. Jersey's on that list. You got three cities in Jersey that are basically the major cities in the state of Jersey: Camden, Trenton, and Newark. Trenton and Newark and Camden, all three black cities. Camden already been demonized, the murder capital of the United States and all that type of stuff, running black folks out of there. See, they got strategies to get black folks out of these cities, and it's nationwide. And what Glenn Ford is pointing out, and Glenn Ford didn't need to point it out to anybody that's conscious, is that you got black elected officials that are in bed with these policies.
Yes.
To eliminate their own people from these cities.
Right.
We got to get these clowns out of there. And you got to get people in there that's conscious of what we're talking about. And it can be done. It's not like it can't be done. It's organizations out here pushing for this.
And that's why when, you know, we say it about the young people, whether they Z or millennials or whatever, the quote-unquote these labels of boomers or whatever, we have to have the people on the ground that will help develop them. And they have to be able to communicate with each other. Because do you think that they will want that to occur? And I hate to have to say it like that. They will want, like, you know, but we have to look at history. When it has occurred, what's that? Lowndes County in Mississippi. Look at the issue. Look at the retribution. And I that's the way I see it. Because of what they did in the 60s.
Yeah, and what that town represented.
Political
yeah.
position.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the condition, the type of lack of service when we're talking about septic tanks. Look, you know, St. Louis. Look at the condition. When we're talking about the, whether it be, or Michigan, and we're talking about the water, that's, I mean, these are majority communities. But the political leadership, or the lack of being able to cultivate the political leadership, is what is not, the ball was dropped.
Yeah, but Richard, you're pointing out all aspects of the strategy that Glenn Ford is talking about. When you're talking right. about the poisoning of a city's water supply that's predominantly black, that's predominantly, sure, you got a few whites living there, but they're, to this system, they're cannon fodder. If they lose, you know, be that as it may. But they're not going after the whites that's sprinkled in. They're going after the majority black population of these cities by any means necessary. And you see where they'll stoop to any level to do it. You're going to poison the city's water supply to the point now where the water is still poisoned and they charging people for that crap and then shutting off when they don't pay their bill. What kind of? And you got black elected officials still in that state. Come on, man. Come on, Richard.
And can I give 10 cities? And this is in the, these are part of the small cities in those states that you talk about where the population is greater. Louisiana, Lehmanville, population, total population 795. Black population 548, 68% of the population. That's Lehmanville is in Louisiana. Mississippi, Renova, 820 population. Black population, 806, 98% of the population. These are cities now. Mississippi, again, Pickens, 818 total population. Population of blacks, 767, 93%. It goes on and on. Alabama, Bellarmine, 800 population, 816, black population, 756, 92% of the population. We go to South Carolina, Bowman, 816 the population, black population, 569, 69%. If we control those cities. And you see, they moving through the South, right? We are, you know, and we don't we have the history? That's what Republic of New Africa was telling us, right? You know, take the Southern states. That's what the Black Farmers Coalition was telling us, to develop a cooperative farm, you know, over the farmland. So, and when you're talking about the political strategy, we're talking about the history. We're talking about what has occurred. What we have to do is not be in a defeatist position in 2018, but be energizing these young people, energizing ourselves, that our expectation is that we can do this.
Yeah, I know it. It can be done. And it's people doing it. The thing is, Richard, it's people doing it. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's already people doing it. Just join in. Let's go to 803, area code. 803. No. Are you on a hands-free or something?
I'm my cell
good.
Phone.
Good. Okay, I hear you now.
Okay, no doubt. This is Max Parfish, also from Black Talk Radio Network.
How are you, brother?
I'm doing good, brother. It's a wonderful conversation you're having here. We need to have these types of conversations, for sure. I was listening in when you were reading the report from Glenn Ford and talking about New Jersey. I'm a New Jersey native myself, born in Paterson, New Jersey.
Okay.
And as you know, that at one point had a huge black population. while I was there. And what happened is they built this new county jail there as an economic development program and started throwing everybody in these prisons and jails. The first black mayor in the history of that city was Marty Barnes. And it was found out, and I had some small part to play in this, that he was using the city's coffers to pay for all of his lavish lifestyles. And at one point, even photos of him out on a skiing trip with his mistress, all expense paid by the city, was put out into the media. And he ended up going to prison behind that. But he was the first black mayor of the city of Patterson working with these white supremacists to enact policies that were getting rid of the black people. So now if you go to Patterson, New Jersey, you'll find small pockets of black population. The majority now is Hispanic, and they were the replacement for the black
people. Wow. Man, I'm telling you. Well, listen, we're talking about those strategies that they're implementing, Brother Max. You know, we got to be aware. And listen, that's what we do. You do it on your program. We got to make our people aware of what's going on, man. Because some of our people are not aware. Our people suffer from the lack of knowledge in a lot of instances. We don't know what's going on. And the system that we live under makes sure that the majority of blacks don't know. Because they make sure that, at least on the terrestrial level, they take off any type of educational programming or any conscious black talk programs. They take it off. And you know what they replace it with.
Yes.
On the television level, the only issues and answers type of programs that dealt with any black issues was that one that Roland Martin was on, that TV One program. Other than
Alexander Perry was doing it, and because she was doing it was the reason she was terminated.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. So, you know, that's why, you know, we do what we do, and I'm happy that you, listen, I'm happy you came on and shared some things with us this evening, man.
Well, I'm like you, brother. I believe that knowledge is the most important and most valuable commodity that we possess and can make all the difference in the world. So education is a huge part of everything that we're doing. And we're fighting against a propaganda machine that has global reach and resources that we could never begin to compete with. So we're doing it in a way where we're using the truth as the best tool that we have available.
Brother Max, listen, before you leave us, I want to shift gears because I know that your mass incarceration and this slavery is a lot of things that you press that's always dear to your heart. We have in some of the cities now liberal white politicians that have run for office, especially under these DAs. We have one in Philadelphia that blacks seem to get excited about, and we always do that. Sometimes we fall for the okie doke, and I don't know. It seems to always happen. Blacks have gotten excited about this one politician that had one office, and it's that we're not alone. It's like this in other cities, and it's certain things put up as window dressing. I'll use the term, but when you get down to the real brass tacks of what's going on with these police killings, what's going on with mass incarceration, and what's going on with our political prisoners that's languishing behind bars. Because the one DA we have here, it's been a resolution put forth about Mumia getting a new trial. Because he has the power to do that as the DA. But let's see what happens. See, you know, I don't care necessarily about the window dressing. I want some of this stuff that has been structurally the legs and the arms of white hegemony are dismantled. When you talk about mass incarceration, when you talk about our political prisoners, and a lot of these men and women are held behind bars just for their beliefs and trumped up charges by COINTELPRO. A lot of these people haven't done anything. And languishing behind bars in solitary confinement for 30 years, that'll drive any man completely mad. Talk about a little bit of that before you leave us.
Well, indeed, I have met some of those brothers myself and sat down and talked with them. I remember when Brother King was at the Millions for Prisoners March on Washington, and he was one of the keynote speakers there. He followed up right behind me. And after spending over 30 years in solitary confinement, being an advocate, and finally having his freedom, he decided that he was in complete agreement with what we were talking about, that this was modern-day slavery, that the only reason that they were keeping him in there is because he was earning them over $150,000 a year. And they don't see these people as human beings. They just see them as economic empowerment tools, reusable resources. That's why our recidivism rate is so damn high. We're talking about nearly 80% recidivism rate in states, and on the federal level, nearly 50%. Those are reusable resources. And they often use them as weapons against our people, as you mentioned earlier. I've lost some close comrades recently who were assassinated for what they've been doing. So being in prison is a little bit better, I guess, in some ways, than being dead. And that's what they do, too. We remember what happened out in Chicago with Brother Hampton. So in any case, when we talk about this on New Abolitionist Radio, we always look at it from the perspective of a slavery abolitionist, because we don't think that slavery ever ended at any point. And we have shown almost every week that that is true. So that's how we look at this, and the actions that they take, the system that we're dealing with, the participants that are involved are all part of a system of chattel slavery, where they're hunting people in the streets and then storing their bodies for a profit. And they also use that same technique, as the brother was talking about, in redlining and where they change the structure of the color of their community by building prisons in rural white areas and then filling them up with black people and then claiming that they have a large black population. Things that they do, you know? So, and then finally, you mentioned also the DAs. The DAs they have immense power in this system. One of the core drivers behind mass incarceration in modern day slavery is our prosecutors.
The DA,
Across America, 95% of all prosecutors are white, and 83% of them are white men. And they spend all day long doing nothing but incarcerating people of color. That's primarily what they do. So that's a huge issue and a huge problem. And we've been attacking it by supporting candidates for those officers now who are running on abolitionist platforms. They're talking about mass incarceration and how they're going to end it. For instance, the gentleman that's running for district attorney in Philadelphia right now has said that he will no longer make any arrests for marijuana. He's going to reduce petty thefts to just fines. There's so many things he's trying to make a difference in, and he's doing it as a reformist, not as an abolitionist, but he's still doing that. And we need more district attorneys to look at this as something that's happening to this country that they need to change or repair or fix or abolish, rather than just jumping in and adding to the problem. So hopefully I covered the topics that you pointed out. And if you want to hear anything about what we're talking about, you can hear it right here on Black Talk Radio Network at New Abolitionist Radio.
Give the date, the days, Brother Max.
Oh, indeed. We are live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and worldwide. But you can check out our massive archives 24 hours a day or 7 days a week.
Hey, Brother Max, I heard you mention that DA, and now I'm here. We broadcast out of Philadelphia, myself and Brother Richard. And, with me, I'm from Missouri. When you're dealing with white folks, you got to share with me, because I don't believe nothing that they say. So I'm just letting you know. And you know that they have put in term it a request for Brother Mumia to have a new trial. So, to me, that's a litmus test. I know which way he's going to fall on that. If he falls another way, I'll be shocked. I might fall out of the chair I'm sitting in. But let's see what happens. And Brother Max, hey, man, thanks for calling, man. Brother Max, you still there? I think we're losing you a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I said I'm in agreement with you. I don't trust them either. But I also trust the Democratic Party even less. They may be our biggest enemy right now.
I hear you, brother. Hey, man, listen, thanks for calling. Thanks for calling, man.
Please.
Elliot, can I give a couple of more cities? Because I think it's important for us. You know, how many times do we hear where we're the majority, right? And these are mid-sized cities. And if you don't mind, I just want to do five.
Go ahead.
South Carolina, Abbeville, total population 5,197. Black population 2,975. Percentage 57%. Georgia, Conley, total population 5,125. Black population 3,218. Percentage 62%. New Jersey, Salem, New Jersey, total population 4,997. Black population 3,153, 63%. And I'll end with this one. Pennsylvania, Farrell, total population 4,852. Black population 3,164, 65%. We have the numbers, we have the place. You know, we have to, you know, when we're talking about political strategy, the leadership in these areas, when you talk about having it now, couldn't you imagine having the conventions where you have representatives from these cities attending these, the convention, like what Brother Zaki Baruti does, and they're bringing their delegates, and we're creating, marshaling a unified strategy, just as you just got finished mentioning, where we're going to be developing a DAs or people who will work in these departments, which means that we're going to be pushing for Black females and males to be have the kind of technical legal degrees so that they can be able to have the positions in those areas, where they can become the DAs of those areas and actually control the legal ramifications of those areas, which also controls the economic input.
Yeah.
That's a strategy from the ground up.
Yeah.
That raises that expectation for young people that this is what they can do besides football, basketball, the music industry, the film industry, that has real political power, political and economic power, and then be historically and culturally grounded? Where are we talking about that?
And you know what? Out of those figures, Richard, keep in mind that historically, our people were always used to flying under the radar. And when I use that term, flying under the radar, whites would always tell everything about their family. If they had three kids, they'd write it down. They'd always report themselves to the census. Because, listen, whites benefited from this system of white hegemony and white privilege. So they made sure they would tell everything about themselves. How many people in their family, this, that, and the other. Blacks, we didn't benefit from this system. And we didn't trust it. So generally, blacks didn't, a lot of blacks, listen, my father and mother, they didn't fill out a census. I don't recall when they ever filled out a census because they didn't trust the government. Most blacks don't fill out accurately no census figures about how many children you got, who's in your family. They didn't do it. So usually when you see these stats confirming that blacks might be 60% of a city, believe me, it might be 70% or maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just throwing that out there. Let's get a couple calls on here. Cause let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, man?
Hey, sir, how you doing?
But hey, Brother Richard,
how you doing now?
How y'all brothers doing tonight?
Great,
good.
Praise be to Allah. You know, let me digress for 1 second, Elliot, before I talk about the political, the DA's thing, the march yesterday about the gun violence. On sport and play real quick, you know, I was so happy as I'm waiting to y'all. You know, as you know, Duke lost tonight, so I'm glad they gone. You want to say to play on white supremacy or white racism, but I hate that university. Not that some other ones ain't just as bad, but just something about Blue Devils, just the name itself, so I'm glad they're going home. And, L.A., you've been a sports fan. Richard, you may not be quite a sports fan. It's a brother I was just showing him 60 Minutes. I don't know if you saw him, L.A. His brother, he's from Nigeria, number 34. He got, like, an African name. This brother ain't no joke, Elliot. This boy is going to be a – he's going to – after LeBron and him kind of wind down, this boy going to be the star of the league, man. And he played for Milwaukee Bucks. I can't pronounce his last name, but his family's from Nigeria. He was born in Greece. This brother got hands. His hands are like a foot long, Elliot. All right, brother's a man. He is – oh, the brother's – he got game. That's all I can say, Elliot. He got game. Check – we get a chance, Elliot, pull him up or whatever, okay?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, the brother ain't no joke. And see what I like, Elliot – he got a black girlfriend because, you know, there's a lot of whites throwing him, white girls throwing him. So far, he lived with his mother and his mother and his father and brothers just got their visa to come from Greece to live with him in Milwaukee. You know, that's a little small, little racist town anyway. And so far, he's maintaining it. And he seemed like a humble brother because when the white reporter kept on, you know, talking about being a big star, he said, well, I don't look at myself as a star. I'm just a regular guy, you know. And he said, I don't think I'm a big shot. I'm just a ball player. You know, he seemed like a real humble guy. He's grounded. And like I said, what I like when they show that, because I expect him to have a white girlfriend. So far, he got a black girlfriend that's living with him and his mom and his family in Milwaukee. So far, the brother's like, he's showing me he got some sense and stuff. You know what I mean? Still, he's young. So we got to wait and see. But so far, I like what I see out of the brother, okay, Elliot?
Okay.
And that's all I say on that subject, okay?
All right.
All right, and moving on, Elliot, I'm going to have to challenge you a little bit, Elliot, on brother that just called from Black Radio. What's the brother's name? Brother Max. Well, Elliot, he may surprise you. Like I said, Elliot, I'm like you, Elliot. I'm from the Show Me State, too. I don't trust no white man in anything, but I believe Lad Crafton may shock you. He may actually give me a new trial. He don't be surprised if he does, because I'm telling you, this white man,
well,
he
listen,
don't care
if,
about, he
if,
don't care about pissing off white people. He don't give a damn.
If he does, if he does, Joe, then he don't get no kudos from me because he's only doing the right thing.
Oh,
you don't give anybody
that,
the right kudos for doing the right thing.
Elliot, don't get me wrong. I agree with you, but what I'm saying, Elliot, I'm not going to sit there and fight against somebody that's trying to help me. That's what I'm saying. He's supposed to do
I'm not fighting against him. I'm not fighting against him. I just don't trust him.
And I respect Elliot, but like I said, man, he done did more already than that Negro that's probably looked like me and you, that black Negro that's in jail 7 to 5 years for prison.
Oh, well, all he was interested in was putting money in his pocket. And that's the problem with black representation.
I agree.
Well, that's one of the problems. Okay. Good. I'm sorry.
So if Crafty do half more than what that Negro did, he done did something. That's what I was going to say. But I agree with you. If he gives me a new trial, I'd say the man did the right thing, and I give him credit for it. I mean, because like I said, at the end of the day, it's about trying to right some wrongs in this racist judicial system. That's all. I look at the big picture. That's all. You know. But, Elliot, the sister that called from Delaware, Sister Melanie, and I join with you, Ellen, hoping that sister becomes, she become a frequent caller, because I like her rap. And I like how she referenced the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know what I mean? Because the sister, she's like, she's real grounded and stuff. And I want all our sisters and brothers, this first-time callers or soon-to-be first-time callers, when you call in Time for an Awakening, call all the programs. Call Elliot, Brother Ellen Richard's show. Call Brother Oshie's show. And the Proof of Consciousness show. And Dr. Rogers' show and Troy's show. Call, support all the shows on Time for an Awakening, because we all got good programs right here. I know I'm missing somebody, other shows, but you know what I'm talking about, Ellie. Call all the, support all the shows. And like I said, I hope the sister's still listening, and I hope she calls and tell her family and friends to support the station as well. We need more calls to call in and make this network as strong as it can be and stuff like that, because that's what it's all about. Like I said, Ellie, our people suffer from lack of knowledge, and that's basically what it comes down to, lack of knowledge. But you know, Ellie, I watched the Brother Ellie and Richard, I watched the various programs yesterday showing the marches around the country, right, against this gun violence. And I forgot I was downtown yesterday and actually ran into a group of young black sisters and brothers. There was just a whole group of young white people, young white children, or young white people as well. But I will say this. those young blacks that I ran into, they got their head on straight, Ellie. And it goes, and I harken back to what you were saying to Brother Richard earlier. If these young sisters and brothers had a chance to really have some black people pushing them, they would put these black politicians to shame. Because the ones I talked to downtown, Ellie and Richard, them sisters and brothers know what time it is. They was in their, like, 20s and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sisters and brothers was dynamite, man. They knew what time it was. They value their life. They know what their sense of self-worth is about. They had good self-esteem. They know where they're going, and they know where, and they don't like the direction this country is going in, and they made that very clear. They was very eloquent in the way they spoke and stuff. I had a chance to talk to them like 20 minutes right down at the corner, 11th and Market, and these sisters and brothers had to act, and they made me feel proud as a 56-year-old black man. They made me feel so proud. I said, man, I even told them, we had young people like y'all all over the place that can get on TV. I said, y'all would do our people proud. And they thanked me for it, too. You know, man, I had a good rap with them, man. I left that conversation with them feeling really uplifted because I said, just let me know there is some hope for our people in the future. A lot of people ain't out here being thugs and hoodlums and walk around with their pants hanging down. You got a group of young black people out here. They know what time it is, man. And just meeting them yesterday, Ellie Richard, it just reaffirmed my belief. That's all, you know. It really reaffirmed where these people's, you know, where our people's mindset is at. You know, let me know it's hope for the future. You know.
Okay.
But I will say this, Ellie, and a couple more things, and I get off. White folks should know, and I think some of them are starting to realize it now. Even though they're still a bunch of racist bigots, they realize that this NRA. I don't know if you saw the NRA put out a statement yesterday about the marches around the country. Now, remember, Elliot, these are young white children, for the most part, getting gunned down in these schools. Is that correct?
Whether it be
Columbine, mm-hmm. whether it be Florida.
Those mass shootings. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, and a lot of these white people have voted for Trump and these Republicans over the years. And believe I'm no water carrier for the Democrat Party. I'm just stating out the facts as they are. The NRA put out a statement. Knowing that these young people have been murdered in these schools, like you said, you go to these black schools, it's like a prison, but these white schools where it should be metal detectors and stuff, it's not none. But the point I'm saying is the NRA made a tweet saying that they caught the whole marches with all these passionate young white children, all these passionate young black children, Latino, that were in Asian, that were speaking from the heart. The NRA said it was a circus, it was a clown show, a carnival. So this is what they think of these young white people, you know what I mean? So this should let these ignorant white people know that the NRA don't give a damn about their sons and daughters' lives. Well, we already knew that after Sandy Hook, when you got little white babies being brutally murdered, and that didn't change these no-good racist bastards' heart. So if Sandy Hook didn't change them, I sure didn't expect Florida to change it. You understand what I'm saying? Because it's the kind of racist minds that you're dealing with, you know? I mean, these people, man, these some heartless people, man. And the last couple points, Ellen Richard, I was watching our brother from Philadelphia, Mark Lamont Hill, right?
Okay.
He was on CNN last Thursday with Don Lemon. He was talking about the killing in Sacramento, which I'm sure all you and Richard are familiar with. The brother got shot in his grandmother's yard with a cell phone. Mm-hmm. Now, they had a retired white police. See, this is the point I'm making to you and the listener audience, Ellie and Richard. This shows you why we got an uphill battle. That's why programs like yours is important, Brother Max on Abolition Radio. This is why programs are so important. Because, see, white folks, if this stuff is going to stop and cease this police brutality, it's going to have to come from strong black men and women like us. Because these crackers, for the most part, they're in total denial. Now, Mark Lamont Hill was interviewed. He was his other guest with his retired white police officer from the LAPD. Well, Mark Lamont Hill was breaking down facts after facts, not no rhetoric, not no name calling. He just laid out the facts as they were, the reality of the history of this disparity of black men and women being brutalized and murdered at the hands of the police in comparison to white people. This devil, racist devil ex-cop, he going to sit there and say, oh, that's not true. My data don't back that up. It's no, you know, cops don't look at race when they deal with. I said, man, what the hell world are you living in? I mean, what planet you living on? You know what I mean? And no matter what Mark Lamont Hill was saying, dealing with facts, this white cop was in total denial that he going to dispute everything the man said. So if you got that kind of attitude, Elliot, on the in law enforcement, then you go up to the DA's office, like you and Brother Max was saying, these DAs will awesome power. So is it any wonder white cops continue to murder black people at will and get away with it? Is it any wonder why we see the jail cells full of young black men and women around the country? We got these kind of racist white attitudes, man. This is white racism at its most deadliest, if you get my drift.
And it's normal.
it's not an exception.
And that's right, Richard.
What seems to me, or what I would push against, is what is not norm. And I think the black psychologists have said, for us as individuals and as a group, one, to expect anything different, and two, to as a group, to not put in place anything to prevent it.
I couldn't agree with you, Richard. I couldn't agree with you more, Richard, because, I mean, we see clearly, you know, that if it's going to be done, it's going to have to be done with us, the stuff, man. And my last 2 points on Chicago, you all mentioned Chicago. As you know, Brother Richard and Ellie, I went my car drive when I was down in Dallas, Texas this past summer. Well, what I didn't get a chance to tell you, I just kind of slipped my mind. While I was in Chicago, I was waiting to catch the train to go to Dallas from Chicago. We had like a 3 or 4 hour layover, so I had some time to kill. So you know me, this is like my second time in Chicago. So what I did, since I had some time to kill, I asked one of the brothers that work at the train station, the Union Station in Chicago, I asked him, I said, which bus? And this is no lie, Ellen Richard. I asked him, I said, which bus that you catch, they right by the train station that goes to, like, the black community. So the brother told me which bus to catch. But the brother said, well, you know, you better be careful going to certain neighborhoods. So I said, I know you're right, bro. I said, but you know, I'm from Philly. I said, I'm used to going to some rough neighborhoods. So what I did, I got myself on the bus, and I caught the bus from Chicago, and I went to probably the heart of the hood in Chicago. And you know me, I'm walking around and stuff like that. You know, I'm a new face, so nobody even knew who I was, because, you know, I'm like a stranger. So brothers looked at me, and you know, when you're in an area like that, the worst thing you could do is act like you're afraid. So I walked like I knew it, like I belonged there. So I made eye contact with some of the brothers, and they said, what's up, dog, and all this. I said, what's up, brothers? And I said, you know, gave them the greetings and stuff like that, kept on walking. And I walked through the whole part of Chicago. I stayed there for like about an hour and a half, because it was just summer day, so I had a chance to get the flavor of the neighborhood. And I felt comfortable, because like I said, I'm a black man. I grew up in the hard streets of North Philadelphia, so I felt like I belong. And at no point, Ellen Richard, was I afraid. You know what I mean? Cause I walked, and I said, I'm not saying something couldn't happen to me, but I got out of the neighborhood safe and sound, and after I was safe for about an hour and a half, got back on the bus, like the brother told me, which bus to catch, came back to the train station. But I just felt good being around our people, Ellen Richard. You understand what I'm saying? I had a kid just walk around in the hood of Chicago. And I did the same thing back in 2005. Me and a friend of mine went to Houston. And I had a chance to, me and him walked around the black part of Houston, Texas. And I felt good just being around our people, with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Just being around our people, man. It just gave me like a new lease on life, if you will. You know what I mean? Helen Richard. So that's so good, man. That's all I'm saying. It's so good. Mm-hmm. You know? But yeah, like I said, we got to do what we got to do as a people. And, you know, with shows like y'all's to wake our people up and network with our people and correct these problems and stuff. Because we see clearly we can't wait for white society to do it, because they're not going to do it. They have no interest in doing it. They got a claim and keeping our people oppressed, keeping our people in pretty much servitude. And like you said, Elliot, all over the city, you got these black politicians that's working hand in hand to get our people out of these cities like Camden and Philadelphia, Chicago, Detroit, by saying the neighborhood's crime ridden, this and that. But at the same time, these whites coming in the neighborhood, building up $1 million townhouses right in the heart of North Philadelphia, right in the heart of Chicago, Chicago's worst neighborhood, Harlem, New York, all these places. This is no accident. This is by design. And you got these handkerchief-headed Negroes working hand in hand to help these white rich developers run their people out of the neighborhood. They are a disgrace. That's why I say, LA, watch this temple stuff, man, because like I said, I don't trust them black politicians and them black clergy as far as I could throw them, because like I said, they got two faces. They got a public face for black folks when they're in front of them, but behind the scenes, it would not surprise me, Ellen Richard, if them niggas didn't already get their palms greased. I mean, sure, you got people like Paula Peoples and others that's good people, that's righteous people, that's really doing the right thing. But some of them other Negroes, Elliot, I trust them as far as I could throw them.
Joe, I want to thank you for your call, man.
Thank you, my brother. Peace and blessings.
Take care now.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to try to clear this board, Richard. We got about, I guess when we come back from break, we might have about 20 more minutes left, because I want to get you out of here early tonight, Richard, and I got to. Of some things to do with my daughters. I promised them some things, and I'm going to have to do it. Yeah, so I guess after the break, we've got about maybe 15 more minutes left, and we've got a couple callers, so we'll get them on.
Okay.
We're gonna take a brief break. When we come back, we go back to the phones, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. 32, time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Sundays at 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
Help me, please.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And as always, I enjoy the open forum when we get to exchange and talk with the listeners. Time for Awakening. We got about 15 minutes left in the conversation this evening, and Brother Richard, we'll go right back to the phones. Let's go to 646.
Hey, what's going on, Richard and Elliot? I see old Richard got to go to bed early tonight for the daddy, huh? Hey, daddy got you coming in an hour earlier. So, Richard, said you can't hang out with the brothers and the sisters. What's going on?
No, well, listen, to be honest, Jay, it's not Richard. I promised my daughter, and I'm taking them to see it. I promised my daughter, because they wanted me to go with them to see Tarn.
Oh,
How the heck I'm Black Panther. So,
oh, you're going to go see it?
Yeah, so I...
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Y'all yeah, go so. Catch... Y'all gonna catch the late show
yeah,
when
exactly.
the natives ain't gonna be in there acting a fool, I guess. That's,
you're right.
That's a good time. You know, most of the fools will be all in bed getting ready for work at school tomorrow. So that's a good thing. All right, make sure you have your popcorn, some jujubes, and all that.
Yeah, okay.
Your grandson going with you too, Elliot?
No, I don't have any grandchildren.
Oh, okay, all right, well, it's even better. You'll be able to really enjoy it. But listen, right quick, man, because I know y'all rushing tonight. Man, there was a disappointment tonight with Ole Miss porn star Stormy. She didn't give them anything, really. She didn't give them anything. They was looking for something juicy and good. The only thing she gave them was the thought that maybe somebody may have threatened her. She said that she only slept one time with the clown. Now, here it is. They was popping this up like it was going to be some bombshell and all of this. You got people on Twitter acting the fool and everything in anticipation, getting upset because the basketball game went into overtime and everything. And here it is. What did she give them? Gave them absolutely nothing. Now, the only thing I observed from looking at it was that maybe they could get them for some campaign finance stuff. But other than that, they ain't going to really be able to get them on nothing unless he decides to become stupid tomorrow morning like he usually do and start, tweeting some nonsense. But the other girl, she gave more information out than old Stormy did, you know? Now, I mean, it's just, I don't understand, man. It's just amazing. But now in the process, like I said to you the other day, I'm more concerned about the tariffs in Bolton than I am about, you know, his sex life. Because that, ain't got nothing to do with reality. You know, if the truth be told, You can't expect him not to have behaved in the manner in which he has behaved during that period of time and further on. He got wealth, he got position, he got all of those things that make women like her go out there and do the do with clowns like him. You know? So let's stop playing games. The reality is, what is he gonna do to destroy the country? You know, what's going to happen with this tariffs?
Or bring it back to its rightful place, which is the position that I'm taking. And Jay, you know, you're making me continue to do some homework and trying to bolster that argument that Trump is probably taking it one step closer, maybe from Nixon, but definitely from Ronald Reagan. When we outline the consolidation of America's imperial power, and I think that we when we look at it a geopolitical perspective and look at the capitalism and where it is, you know, creating Fortress America is what Trump's mission is, and the neocons. The what's that guy? The speaker. What's his name? That looked like Howdy Doody.
Ryan.
Right. I mean, to be able to take, because the you know the whole thing when you look at the Supreme Court level, they raise the question about the original intent of the Constitution. When you look at what the whole thing about the states. And the pushing for state, not just state rights, but pushing the legal laws in each state in order to be control of the state. They've been doing that under Alec. When you look at the consolidation in relationship to the government, the federal government saying that it's not supposed to be involved in anything in relationship to social services. Only as it relates to pull back everything under what's his name, the president that Roosevelt gave in order to
stop the peasant revolution of the 30s and 40s, that they're pulling that all out from under them to take America that is only supposed to be run, and this was the original attempt when from 1776 to be run by the wealthy elite. It wasn't supposed to be a democratic society where each one person had a vote, even if it was white males. It was just supposed to be ran by the elite, a representative democracy, republic. So you're making me show, you know, to go and make the case that Trump, you know, as crass as everybody's calling him, you know, when you look at what the policies that he's putting in place, it's what they wanted to do.
But you know, you would hope that it won't go this far. Now, I don't know if people realize that that is what he's trying to do, and I don't think that they'll be able to honestly get away with it because the society is too dependent on certain handouts that the government gives, that you just can't place it in a situation to where it's cut off, you know, because then you will impoverish too many people. It was like a picture that I saw out there in California where you got people, I would say 60% of the people were white, sleeping in the streets,
right,
you know, in so-called middle-class neighborhoods and things of that nature. Now, you can't continuously have that going on, and then in the process, you got the things going on which he's trying to do around the world that's causing nothing but conflict. And, you know, I guess they must feel as though by putting someone like Bolton in the position that he's in, he's going to now be able to intimidate other nations into being scared of what he might do. I don't think they're going to play that game. I don't see that. I don't see the world going along with it, like I said to you the other day. I mean, it all boils down to one thing. How does Russia and China respond to this whole tariff thing? It's, you know, because like I was saying to you, how is it that I could go into a store and purchase vegetables and frozen foods and things of that nature coming from China? You know what I mean? And you know, I didn't even know that China was that big of a consumer of pork. Now, who's gonna fulfill that? You know what I mean? Possibility, could it be Mexico? Could it be Africa? Now, if those nations are placed in the position to fulfill that, don't you think that the nature of America will be that they will try and cause some sort of reaction in those countries? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And that goes into another thing, which, you know, because I want to believe, and I might be wrong, NJ and Elliot and to the listening audience, that this time is where the oligarchs around the world in all those countries are in cahoots, you know, with this whole, because remember when the crisis came, what they call the Great Recession, that they were saying it really didn't affect poor people. What they were talking about, the crisis affected them, and they still got paid from it. So they have agreed, you know, around the world, the oligarchs. The only challenge is now, and the crisis they have is with such a large young population of the Southern Hemisphere. Now, China has a better control.
They have to have jobs, though.
Right, that's the
point. They have to be able to
And have the political managers to be in agreement with the financial managers, the financial elites that they will play. Now,
but you know,
$60 billion ain't no money.
But let me ask you this right quick. If that's the case, why do you think they're not dealing with this whole debt that these young people today are having and in with this whole student loan?
you would think that they would try to retract some of this debt that these kids are having, because it's not even helping the economy, because most of these kids, when they get jobs, they're not able to move out of mommy and daddy house. They're not able to do the necessary thing that, you know, people like myself was able to do back 30 and 40 years ago.
And the boomers offer the backs of that. I mean, the boomers only were able to do that. Well, let me say this in because of time. It seems to me the boomers, and you raised it, to me, Jay, could have retired, the president.
All right, Clinton, this is Steve.
When Clinton came in. But look what they did. They took the boomers' financial pension from them. Right?
No, I think they started with the pension with Reagan, and then it
when the market crashed. Remember, because the market was blowing. Right. The market made everybody made them feel just like they felt when they had their houses blow up. But then that was when they were having everybody in investment club. Everybody was in the market. The computers didn't really hit to come to the common person yet, that whole thing. But when that crashed, those people who could have retired at 40, imagine those who lived through, who were the love child children of whites, who, would have been freed up to go anything and knew about social justice. If they didn't have to pay for their child college education,
but you know something, Richard? I think people suffered more in the Bush era, the Sons era financially, when they had the crash in 2005, 2008 in that area, than they did during that whole Clinton era. Because that's when I made most of the money I ever made, basically in the stock market, was with that tech boom.
Right. But it was
initiated by Clinton. That was during the Clinton era, because I remember certain stocks that I bought. You know, I have one or two of them still to this day. But the point of the matter boils down to this: what is the country gonna do in regards to young people, regards to their debt? That's the question that, honestly, I think we need to try and figure out more than anything. Because I'll leave you with this: the display that was put forward today in regards to this whole gun nonsense, I think, is just the beginning of possibilities of young people having a bigger voice than one would imagine, because those are the type of things that will wake you up. But what happens with us as the people is, will we be a part of that narrative, or just be used like we have been in the past with all of these situations that we supposedly come into allyship with these characters? That's why I was puzzled by what Otis was saying earlier in regards to Dwayne Wade, because in all honesty, what do you expect him to do? He can't put forward that narrative and deal with black people are hurt on that level, because then they'll try to use the reverse racism nonsense. So in order for him to be able to do what he did, he has to basically do it to promote inclusion and, white suffrage.
Imagine him ever putting that type of money
into an issue like, let's say, Trayvon Martin or this young brother that just got killed in Sacramento or something on that level. You know what I mean? I mean, it would cause him nothing but headaches and problems.
He would be dead.
Well, that's part of being, but that's part of being a man. That's
part
of.
No, yeah, I agree.
But that's part of being a man. So you know, if they want to take the easy way out, that's up to them.
I'll leave it with this, Elliot, because I know you got to go. Manhood in his world is not based on manhood in me and your world, because we don't. He don't say he don't have the same ideology on Africanness. Even though he may have read a book, he may say something, he may have a brief understanding, but he's not going to stand up and let them hang low when it comes down to promoting Africanness. He's not going to challenge white supremacy on that level. But I just like, I guess what Otis is trying to say is, why don't you do it for our people in the same fashion that you do it for the Yorugals? That, I mean, that's what I'm trying to, you know, I guess I'll catch up with Otis online and get a clarification of it. But, I mean, no, I can't think of really any athlete or any entertainer at this time that could make that type of commitment to black people and get away with it. Can you think of one?
No. No.
Well, you had an athlete about 6 months ago that did it. And they're still not playing professional football now.
Hold on one second. No.
Yeah, but we'll get into that. Because I got to move on. I got to clear this board.
He's done it. No. I'll leave it quickly. He's done it. But let's honestly ask ourselves, what percentage of it has really gone to black people? Think about that, and we'll talk about it on Friday. What percentage has really gone to black people in his donations? Look at some of the groups that he donated to.
Well, I don't know whether you've seen a lot of the groups that he donated to. I put them on the Time for Awakening page. I've seen a lot of groups that he donated to.
Right. So what do you think the percentage was?
Oh, I don't know I don't know the percentage, but I've seen a lot of the groups that he's donated to. And a lot of these groups was grassroots. I ain't talking about no NAACP, Urban League, all that stuff. A lot of these groups was grassroots organizations. So,
he's done a damn good job. And like you saying, the daddy ain't going to give him a job. But the funny thing is your boy Ed Reed, because Ed Reed is already crying because of the simple fact he thought the daddy wasn't going to treat him in that way. But he don't know the daddy.
Yeah.
He don't know the daddy. Have a good one, brothers.
Peace.
All right, take care.
Let me clear this one up. Let's go to 602. 602.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. It's Brother Marcus there.
Hey, sir.
All right. Quickly, the brother was talking about that DA was supposed to run in for election. You know, one thing they used to tell me when I was a kid, they say crime doesn't pay. But that's a lie. Crime does pay. The judge gets paid, the DA gets paid, the police get paid, the court officer, the warden, all these people benefit from crime. So when we commit crime, they benefit from it. Now, the entire country is a prison. And the system benefit from it, you know, as far as black people concerned, the educational system that miseducate black people, the health system that diagnose us bad, give us bad medicine and prescription medication. Obviously, we don't have no protection from the police. The food we eat and the water we drink, we see what's happening with the lead poisoning, and we see the food we get is inferior food, and the clothes we wear. You know, we have known the white man have given blankets laden with smallpox to the Native Americans. So actually, we the world really look at black people as a mystery in America, because they wonder how the hell we survive with this cracker here for 500 years living beside this megalomaniac. So, you know, actually, we are a mystery, you know. But you see, as you said, although white people population is decreasing, what they'll do, they'll recruit more from the same group that they're oppressing to manage the system. So that's what they're going to do. They are reducing the population. They just increase more terms to help them manage the system. You know, and with Ben Carson, he was saying about gentrification.
Anytime white folks want to do something to destroy black people, they get a black face and put on it. See, and then it's easier for them to put over what they're doing. You know, we're going to have to develop an arc, an African resettlement committee to move our people out of this country, because we see what's happening. The white man is a dying tiger, you know, and he's trying to take as much people with him on his journey to death. I'll catch you guys on Friday. Thank you very much.
Peace, Brother Marcus. Hey, Richard, you mentioned about the oligarchs a little while ago. I want to play something on the way out for you. This is something that Tony Brown mentioned in an interview. Tony Brown from Tony Brown's Journal. Let me see if I can play this here.
Or the Order of the Devil. And they were people who were aristocrats of the Order of the Illuminati, or the Order of the Devil. And they were people who were aristocrats, intellectuals, people who did not believe in God, who believed in rationalism, as it was called in Europe, in the belief that you could be illuminated as an Illuminati, as was Lucifer, which is why he was thrown out of heaven, and that pious religious belief is corny, based on superstition, and that each person can, if they follow the dictates of the devil, which they call Bapotep or Lucifer, or we call Satan, that you can become God. And there's no need for a God. Now, that is a statement of fact. It was organized by Adam Weisskopf in Ingolstadt University in Bavaria, Germany. It succeeded down through the years. And
about what time frame was that?
It was organized in 1776. May the 1st, which is where May Day comes from. And people think May Day is a celebration of communism. It isn't a celebration of the Illuminati. Communism is a manufactured, phony political concept of the Illuminati. So the Illuminati plays on both sides. But this was in 1776. As a matter of fact, on the American dollar, when you see "In God We Trust," pious Christians, Jews, and Muslims believe it means the Creator God, but it really refers to their God, because they have the seal of the Illuminati on the dollar bill. As a matter of fact, at the base of the pyramid on the seal, if you take the nine Roman numerals, split them into three each, add up the bottom, you get 666. So they're everywhere. But it should not surprise anybody, although it does, because people don't think anyone is this mean to do this. But there are people who believe in God, as you and I do. There are people who believe in goodness, as you and I do. But there are people who believe that there is no God, that there is a devil, who believe in evil. And in my book, I simply document that. And that's simply a part of a generational, passed along religion that has remained underground for very obvious reasons. And they focus on the accumulation of wealth. And their religion is this Illuminism.
That's Tony Brown?
Yeah, you know, from Tony Brown's Journal.
Yeah. That's the first time I heard that one. That's the first time I heard him do that one.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just figured I'd share that because it kind of went along with what you said.
It's real. And, you know, and yeah, that's why it's so important that we, and I'm, you know, singularly focused on us, we as African people have to do what we have to do. And as we talked about on Friday, there's African people, and we see the signs that are in support of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many billions of dollars from leaders was in Swiss bank accounts? How many Africans were a part of the enslavement trade? In the actual purchasing for guns and rum and beads, you know, so we can't romanticize the scope and breadth and historical understanding of what exists, you know. We have to look at it in its face and not be, and that's what I heard you and Jay saying, not be in fear of our, you know, take our manhood back, because it's going to be consequences for being, as you know, that clip said, to being righteous and within your own historic, cultural, and spiritual center.
I agree.
Because that's what they don't want you to have.
Listen, before we leave tonight, I just want to let you know about the lineup. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on Time for an Awakening. The morning starts out with African Perspectives with Brother Oshi from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Monday evening at 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And then afterwards, from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect on timeforanawakening.com. You can check that out on timeforawakening.com. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers is on at 8 in the evening, from 8 to 10 on Tuesday evening. On Wednesday, Sister PLC is back. In fact, she'll be leaving for Africa. I think she'll be here Wednesday, but I know she's leaving for Africa soon. Yeah, she'll be in Africa for a month. I got to give her a call. I got to give her a call, too. But just tune in anyway. She'll be on Wednesday evening from 8 to 10. Sister POC and the program Revive. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, a Black Economic Empowerment Movement, is on from 9 to 10 on Thursday evening. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back at 8 o'clock Friday evening. And on Saturday, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Mother Troy Wilmore, is on from 10 to noon. Richard, that's it for the program. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing,